Hey, Harry.
Hello, mate.
Who do you think will win the football later?
That's a tough one to call. First thing I would say to you is ignore all the paper talk and them TV pundits in their fancy suits. Sorry, son, I didn't mean you. Listen, if you want a sure winner, put your money on... Oh, no! Sandra's back and I forgot to take the bins out.
Listen to Harry and make your best bet with BetVictor. 18 plus, please gamble responsibly.
Son, I'm locked out.
Hello, a very good day to you all. Welcome back to BetVictor's Eye on La Liga, where once again we are making our way through the murky waters of all the news coming out of Spanish football. Delighted to say once again on the show I'm being joined by Mr. Jason Pettigrove. Jace, how you doing, mate?
I'm not too bad, thanks, Ollie. Thanks for having me as always.
Pleasure as always. Jason, I will of course be discussing the turmoil around the upcoming El Clasico that's gets set to take place in about 2 weeks' time, but there's plenty of strife in the build-up with the venue perhaps being changed by La Liga depending on what the Spanish FA say. That's all breaking this evening, this Wednesday evening as we record the show. But before we get into that, we're going to head all the way down to South America because there's plenty of news surrounding Barcelona and potential arrival of the current River Plate coach Marcelo Gallardo, who has been making waves, of course, in South American football. Delighted to say joining us on the show for this evening's conversation about all things Gallardo and Barcelona is a very good friend of mine, Mr. David Windsor, Spanish football commentator, South American football commentator, Spanish linguist, I should say, football writer, football journalist, and a fine fellow as well, Dave. How are you doing, mate?
Oh, beautiful introduction. Thank you, Ollie. Yep, it's a grey afternoon here in Buenos Aires, and don't you dare take Marcelo Gallardo away from this continent.
So I take it there's a fair few people that want him to stay. This is all kind of coming out of the idea, something actually that Tim Vickery wrote a few days ago, and there's been a few murmurs, I suppose some would say whispers around the place, of Gallardo perhaps potentially being the next man to fill the managerial role at Barcelona, of course, once Ernesto Valverde's time is up. And he's a man that has plenty of credibility to his name in South American football, Dave.
Yeah, absolutely he does. The first thing to say about Marcelo Gallardo is he's a serial winner. As a player, he won a trophy with every single club he represented, both in South America and in Europe. And he's taken that into management, became head coach of River, a club, of course, that he played for. Became head coach in 2014. He's won 10 trophies in that time, including the big one twice, the Copa Libertadores, of course, South America's Champions League. He won that in 2015, won it, of course, last year against Boca Juniors in the Superclásico final. So his CV on this continent is absolutely unparalleled. It's fantastic. Clearly, the leap from Buenos Aires to Barcelona would be an extremely big one. But just to give you an insight into how highly he is regarded in South America, last night we had the Boca Juniors president on Argentine TV talking about football and Boca and the Superclásico and beyond. And of course, he was quizzed about Gallardo. And the Boca president said that he considered Marcelo Gallardo to be one of the top 10 coaches in the world. That's the Boca president saying it pretty much on the eve of the Superclásico second leg in the Libertadores. So he's absolutely loved at River Plate, Gallardo, but he's also loved outside of River Plate. And his standing on this continent simply couldn't be higher at the moment.
That's basically blasphemy, isn't it, in Argentinian football?
It didn't go down well with the Boca Boca supporters. It was an honest admission from the Boca president. But yeah, to say that Gallardo's in the top 10 coaches in the world, when you look at his CV, yep, he's pretty much spot on.
Now, I know you and I have spoken about Gallardo actually just a few weeks back, talking about South American football, and there is a feeling that because of he's won two Copa Libertadores, the way he won it last year, the fact that he's on the verge of knocking out Boca Juniors at the semi-final stage this year and could win a third one then with River Plate. There's the idea that he's completed South American football, but there are still sceptics that would think that going to Barcelona is that bridge too far, if you will. I know when you and I initially discussed it, we were thinking maybe lower level, mid-table French managerial options might come available to him, but one of the big clubs in Europe, and arguably the biggest club in Europe, seemed a little out of his reach.
There's certainly a big distance, but what I would say is, you know, people might look at clubs in European football and say, oh, why would you take the chance on Gachado? But from Gachado's perspective, this man's got a CV, and let me say an ego to match, that means that he's not going to go to Europe for a mid-tier side. He doesn't think it's worth it. I think there was a big surprise in many ways on this continent when Gachado, as you referenced, Ollie, beat Boca, the arch Buenos Aires rivals, in the final of the Libertadores on the biggest platform, the biggest stage. Gachado afterwards, he said, I cannot do more than this. And yet he still stayed. And he stayed perhaps because he doesn't want to go to... For example, he doesn't want to go to a Lyon. He wants to go to a Paris Saint-Germain. He wants to go to a Barcelona. He believes he's good enough for that challenge. It is a big leap. There's no doubt about that. But the unity that he's brought at River Plate, the tactical nous he's shown in producing such fabulous performances and results and style of play with River suggests that, listen, it would be a gamble, but if it comes off, it could potentially be a really exciting and really successful acquisition for Barcelona.
Jace, I want to ask you this because you're obviously a big Barca fan and mainly focused yourself on Spanish and European football, obviously being based across in Europe as opposed to South America like Mr. Windsor is at the moment. Gachado, did he ever come on your radar before we started talking in the last few weeks? And I know you and I have spoken while I've been working in South America myself about it, but is he a manager that has been able to bridge the continental divide, if you will, already with his exploits at River Plate? Would Barcelona fans know who you're talking about if you said Marcelo Gachado?
I think it'd probably be split. I think you get some that absolutely would and some that wouldn't. And I think for me, from a personal perspective, there's two ways of looking at this. I think from the point of view of a South American coach, that would appeal to the likes of Messi, Suarez, if he's still there, Arturo Vidal, Artur. The one concern I have, we had Tata Martino a few years ago, and he was, you know, being spoken about as being, you know, very forward thinking and everything else. And although he started off very well, he tailed off dramatically in that season. Difference being, I suppose, he had no experience in Europe. What I'm hearing about Gachado, brave, attack minded, superior ball retention with his teams, he gets his players playing for him, they love to play for him, they go to war for him. Bit of a taskmaster. Only 43. All the things that sort of Barcelona have missed and haven't had under Ernesto Valverde. So I think there's definitely a positive spin on it. The only thing I would say is that because it's, as you've just spoken about there with Dave, it's the biggest job in Europe, in my opinion, and whether he can make that leap from River to Barcelona.
The other thing as well is that Barcelona are a club in transition at this point. I mean, Dave, it's a very tough task for a new manager taking on his first job in Europe at one of the biggest clubs, at a club that is in this kind of transitional element. You can talk about Messi still there, you can talk about Suarez is there, but there are still things that need to change for Barcelona to get anywhere near the heavy heights that they were under Pep Guardiola. I mean, it would be a huge undertaking. He's a manager with ego, but does he have the quality, do you think, and the skill set to be able to transition from South American to European football, which are very different?
Yeah, they are. Listen, I can't talk about the ins and the outs of Barcelona Football Club, but what I can say is that what we've seen and what I think surprised a few people is how Gachado has been able to react tactically in really, really big games in the Libertadores over the years against Argentine sides, against Brazilian sides. He's got an uncanny ability, which always I feel when a coach has this, it really quickly ingratiates him with the players and with the fans because you can see immediately what he's trying to do. He has this ability to change games during the 90 minutes. His substitutions, if you look at the statistical breakdown of how his substitutions have changed games in River's favour, it's incredibly positive, and he just makes these little alterations which sometimes change a 1-1 into a 2-1 victory. And he's got, you know, tactically he's absolutely spot on. It would be a huge gamble. I think one thing that you could say as well with Gachado is he doesn't have the baggage maybe that some other coaches have. I think when he came, if he were to go to Barcelona, there'd be an element of, yeah, youth, because he's 43 years of age. That's in many ways why he can forge such a good relationship with all of his players. Even the players who aren't in the starting 11 love Gachado. But I think, as well as that, his youth just brings a freshness and a fresh energy, fresh ideas to a football club. You know, you could, of course, go with one of the big names in European football. I know Max Allegri was linked to Manchester United in the last couple of days, and he'll be looking for a big club. But Gachado, I just think, of course, I'm biased being based in Buenos Aires at the moment, but I think it would be such a unique and such an interesting gamble. Listen, I know that Tata Martino didn't work him coming from Argentina, but I think the comparison's loose. It's a slightly different style of play. Gachado's got a different kind of swagger, a different kind of globalist attitude, the way he plays, the way he kind of favours the carrot over the stick approach with his players. And especially the youth players at the club means that the young players really love him. He's got a big influence on the academy, and it might not work, but ooh, it'd be very excited to see if it did.
Can I ask you a question, actually, Dave? Something I'm interested in your opinion on. In terms of the egos in the Barcelona dressing room, and I'm talking about players like Messi, like Suarez, like Pique, do you think Gachado's got the presence to be able to deal with those sorts of players? You know, with respect, River have good players, but they're not quite in the same league as some of Barcelona's experienced players.
Yeah, and I think it's a really good point, because I also think that when River do get a footballer who perhaps transcends the club a little bit, quickly they get sold. And even though Gachado has kept a consistency of his squad, it's often said in Buenos Aires and in River circles that there's no real star in the team. He is the star. So if he went to Barcelona, that would be a different challenge for him, no doubt about that. Because when you get a really talented player at River, chances are he's going to move on to Europe, or increasingly actually from Argentina, they go to the MLS. So, yeah, that would be a different challenge, because Gachado doesn't really have the experience in, if a really big individual player emerges, managing him. Normally, for Boca or River or big Argentine or South American clubs in general, the best players get sold very quickly to Europe. Whereas Barcelona, of course, they can keep hold of these really big names. And so something like working with the likes of Messi would be a unique and different challenge for Gachado.
The last thing that Gachado has in his favour is that at River Plate, he's only really expected to compete in one tournament, which is the Copa Libertadores. Whereas at Barca, you have to compete for every single trophy going. You know, Gachado's able to make that balance and not perhaps put out starting 11s in the Copa Libertadores that are the same as the ones he puts out in the Argentinian Primera Division. So he's going to have to learn as well how to really balance a squad properly and compete on all levels if he goes to Barcelona. Because it wouldn't be accepted, Jason, would it, if Gachado just let La Liga slip away in going in search of a Champions League victory?
No, absolutely not. But I think the one thing he will have, I mean, Barcelona fans have been so starved of the type of football that they love watching. I think he'll have some sort of credit and perhaps an extensive honeymoon period if Valverde was to go. He's still going to have to win trophies, and win trophies quite quickly. But I think if they see a Gachado team playing the way they saw a Luis Enrique team playing or a Guardiola team playing, you know, that's what the fans pay their money to see, not this almost sterile, safe way of playing which they've had to become accustomed to under Valverde.
Be interesting to see if this has any more legs to it, the Gachado move. And of course, I'm sure plenty of it will be dependent on what happens in the Copa Libertadores, perhaps in the next week or so, of course, against River Plate, and then the potential final as well in mid-November in Santiago in Chile. Dave, big thanks for joining us and having a quick chat about Gachado, man. And I'll let you get down to the prep for the Super Clásico.
Absolute pleasure. Yep, if I'm still standing after next Tuesday night, then yeah, we'll chat again. Cheers, guys.
Yeah, stay safe. Enjoy the elections and the football, man. We'll see what happens.
Politics and football, beautiful combination as always.
Cheers, David. Thank you very much, man.
Cheers, bye.
Bye. Big thanks there to David Windsor for joining us on the show at David T. Windsor. You can follow him on Twitter and all his exploits down in Buenos Aires as he gets ready for the Super Clásico in the Copa Libertadores. And of course, perhaps gets ready to start writing out some copy about what Gachado could do at Barcelona. It is such an interesting one of having an Argentinian manager who's achieved everything at that higher level, and whether Messi would take to him and perhaps help him win over the dressing room nice and early. There's so many different factors. He's certainly a manager, though, that you feel is deserving of a job in European football at a high level somewhere. Whether Barcelona is too high for him, I don't know. One thing as well I will say is that you can tell Gachado has the swagger by an incident that took place earlier this season. I was actually at the Monumental when they played Talleres. Not Minnow side, but a small club in Argentinian football in the Primera Division. They ended up losing to Talleres that evening. But the big talking point was that when Gachado came out from the dressing room before kickoff, he was wearing a hoodie and not a suit. And everybody immediately said, well, Gachado doesn't care about this evening's game because there's the Copa Libertadores coming up, because he's in a hoodie and not a suit. And when Gachado's in a suit, that shows, you know, and the players,
you know, it's business,
react to it as well. The players definitely react to it and kind of think, yeah, this is a big time night. Gachado's in the suit. We're ready to go. It may not have the same impact at Barca. He'll have to wear a suit every single week, I imagine. But it still, it just shows he's got that kind of confident air to kind of say, yeah, no, I don't care about tonight. It's about business next week, for instance.
I wonder if he's more the Simeone type of manager on the sidelines that, you know, really galvanises not only the players on the pitch, but the fans in the stands as well. Yeah.
He's a cooler customer than that. He's got a look of a Mourinho about him, if I'm honest. He'll go big on the big moment. But the rest of the time, you know, he's quite stoic and chilled, like Mourinho used to be, really, when he wasn't necessarily reserved, but Gachado keeps a lot of it within himself and just stands with quite an intimidating pose on the sideline. But then if something big happens, then he reacts, but he's not turning around and being like, come on, like a Simeone or anything like that.
I suppose Guardiola's come out and said that he doesn't understand how Gachado hasn't been in the top three coaches in the last few seasons when those awards come around, so... You know, I suppose there's no finer recommendation, I guess, than that.
And you know what? I would say the Coppa Libertadores is probably a tougher trophy to win compared to the Champions League, just because of the amount of travel. It lasts a whole year as well. I mean, the qualifying stages started in January and it finishes in late November. So you get December off and then you're back into Coppa Libertadores again. Now, River Plate don't go through that. But don't go through qualification, of course. They're generally there on merit in the group stage straight away. But still, it is a long, drawn-out affair with a lot of travelling all over the place and a lot of rescheduling too. I mean, the second leg of the semi-final still might be rescheduled, and they're meant to play that, what, in a week's time, I think it is?
Talking of games that might be rescheduled.
Well, I was going to say, this is a perfect link into what we are going to be talking about for the second part of the podcast, Jace, which is the other Clásico. It's not a super Clásico. It's a pretty big Clásico. El Clásico, Real Madrid against Barcelona, coming up on November the 8th, I want to say, Jace, if my dates are correct. It's a Wednesday evening. I'm a little tired, I will say. But getting over the hump day and looking forward to that, except for the fact that now La Liga want to move the venue of this game from the Camp Nou to the Bernabeu and have this one played in Madrid and the second meeting of these sides in March. Obviously switched over and played at the Camp Nou, mainly because of what's going on in Barcelona at the moment, the political protests that are taking place that have caused havoc at airports, and there's an idea that perhaps at this time it's not a good time for the biggest side from the capital, Real Madrid, to be going to the Camp Nou to play an El Clásico, particularly when they're so close together in the league table as well.
Yeah, I suppose the latest we've heard now is that the Spanish government are now fully opposed to the idea of playing that game at the Camp Nou on October the 26th. They've cited security concerns. One thing I'm going to say is there's no such concerns when the Spanish police are metering out sort of unjustified violence, in my opinion, on completely peaceful protesters. So let's call that as it is straight away. It's also important to note that neither Real Madrid or Barcelona actually want the game to be moved. Barcelona, for obvious reasons, you've got the supporters that have bought the flights and accommodation and all of that can't be changed. The club will have all the security staffing arrangements sorted already. I mean, there'll be absolute, utter chaos behind the scenes if the Federation were to agree to the move. Real Madrid don't want it moved because then they believe that will hand Barcelona the advantage. With the second game being at the Camp Nou, it could be crucial. Obviously, home advantage that late in the season. Potentially, they've got a point. The very latest that I've heard just before we came on air to record this is that December the 18th is now being considered as a possible alternative. But, and here's the rub, we won't know until Monday. So no meeting right now to thrash it out, to get it done and to give everyone the security of knowing what's actually happening. No, mañana, we'll leave it until after the weekend, 5 days before the biggest game of the season, and then they'll decide what's going to happen. It's absolutely ridiculous.
Well, this is the last thing I read this evening was that the Spanish FA was going to make a very swift decision on the El Clásico venue. So that's obviously changed then in the last few hours, because it was something I was going to say. Well, at least this seems like it's being taken seriously by the Spanish FA and they're wanting to resolve this as quickly as possible, which isn't the case in any way, shape or form then, if you're saying that actually we are going to have an El Clásico perhaps suspended and moved to later on in the season at some point, or even going to have these venues changed. I mean, as you say, Real Madrid don't want it changed. Barcelona said they don't want it changed. And it's very interesting that La Liga went to both the clubs initially first and pled their case, I guess.
Well, asked them their opinion. They said no, and they, well, we don't care about that. We're still going to try and get and it postponed anyway.
Yeah, and then immediately went to the Spanish FA and said, OK, well, we want to get it moved and changed around, or have something done to it to just have it not being done at this time of political unrest. Now, I do think, you know, sport and politics and do end up going hand in hand a lot of the time. But I do think it's a smart decision to at least look at what options are available on the table. Because I know it's caused a lot of problems at places like airports.
It's a ticking time bomb, isn't it?
Barcelona are going to have to travel to Eibar on a coach this week because they're not going to. They're worried they're not going to be able to fly out of the airport to get there. So instead, they're going to have to make the bus trip instead. Which, to be honest, that's not the worst thing in the world. It's going to be a very nice bus and everything. But
I think that might have changed actually. I was working with a club earlier on, and I think they're going to fly out tomorrow instead of Friday, but just to make sure they get there. But even that, I mean, it's. It's
disrupting the
usual. It's a disgrace that they've got to do that.
I mean, yeah, it is. But again, you know, everybody has a right to peaceful political protest as long as it is peaceful. And I suppose the idea of a protest is that it causes disruption. That's how you get attention to it. But if you can do it peacefully at the same time, then that's fine. You know, the football club of Barcelona shouldn't come above political protest at the end of the day.
No.
Without getting too deep into it, I take no real side on either side of whatever is going on in Spanish politics. I have to say that's just, again, personal opinion on the matter. The point is that there are going to be problems. There's going to be some element of trouble, danger, and a lack of safety around El Clasico, and so therefore it's right that it should be looked into. The difference is that if both clubs don't want it changed, if it can't be changed to suit both clubs, and it can't be sorted out in a way that can be putting a game on in a safe manner that doesn't affect perhaps the integrity of the title race and of Spanish football, that's when you've then got a problem. And I don't see how there is going to be a solution to it that both clubs will end up being happy with.
I wonder if they might go for what happened when we had the issues the last time, which is obviously what's led to this now, when they played Las Palmas behind closed doors. And if we remember all the shenanigans that happened on that occasion, where there was a very real prospect of Barcelona losing the points if they didn't play the game, and in the end at sort of the 11th hour they came up with the idea of playing behind closed doors just so they didn't fall foul of anything with the league or the federation. Maybe that's the way around it, is that you don't have fans coming to the game. But where does that leave?
Well, that can't happen for La Liga, surely. La Liga wouldn't. That'd be the last thing that they as a league would want, because this is their grandstand tie of the whole season. I mean, particularly in the Camp Nou, everybody loves seeing that blue and red decked out across the seats, with everybody holding up the banners that says more than just a club and everything like that. And also, it gets more viewers around the globe than almost any other football game. So they can't have it played in front of an empty stadium. As if they could lose more face this season after the debacle around fixtures.
Well, quite. I mean, at the moment, I think the way things are looking, I'd suggest it's highly unlikely it's going to go ahead as planned, which, you know, I think that's a great shame if that is the case. But, you know, there's far too much sort of rhetoric being spoken. And like I just said a little while ago, it's a ticking time bomb.
Couldn't you play the game both ties at a neutral venue?
Again, I guess, you know, anything's possible. But then from a supporter's point of view, you know, let's take the clubs out of the equation just for a minute. All the supporters that are travelling from either all over Spain or all over Europe to watch it, we know it's a very popular game for all football fans, not just Spanish football fans. You know, people at the very last minute have got to change plans, you know, costs that are already astronomical. I think you're talking €179 just for the cheapest seat for that game. I mean, it's a farce, but I guess the long and short of it is safety comes first. So if the Federation and Liga really do believe that supporter safety and safety generally around the ground and in Barcelona itself is at risk, then I guess they've got to make that call.
Yeah, it's really interesting how this is going to be looked at then over the next few days. I really thought we were going to maybe be getting a decision while we were recording this evening, to be honest, after what I read about the Spanish FA trying to be swift with it. But from what you have said, Jason, and breathing fresh air onto the situation, that perhaps it's going to be over the next few days or so, and perhaps even Monday, as you say. So we will keep our eyes and ears to the ground and make sure that we bring you all of the information around El Clasico and the possible rescheduling of the fixture as soon as we can on this show. Any final thoughts, Jace, on the international break? We haven't even touched on Spain. Of course, had a 1-1 draw with Sweden earlier this week. I mean, there'll be a European Euros 2020. Doesn't really make a difference what happens in these qualifiers now, does it?
It doesn't happen now, but I can't really get excited about either of their performances. If they play like that in the tournament, they're going to be straight on the plane back home. I think, you know, let's see in the tournament. It's much changed Spain in both the games. I think the second game, I read somewhere, the Sweden game, that it was the first time that they've never had a player that played in the 2010 World Cup or the 2008 and 2012 European Championships within the side. So I guess from Roberto Moreno's point of view, at least he's looking at everybody, giving everybody a fair chance, and maybe that does get reflected in the scoreline. But they've got to play much, much better than they've had over those last couple of games.
Well, they only conceded late on against Norway to end up with their 1-1 draw in the first game away from home against Norway on Saturday. But then had to do the same thing, I suppose, to claw themselves back against Sweden. I do like the idea of the changing of the guard actually taking place, if I'm honest, and sacrificing a couple of draws against solid without being fantastic opposition. It is a great learning curve for the inexperienced players to kind of face, because they're going to have to start facing the music at some point, because this golden generation isn't going to be hanging around forever for Spain.
No, I guess. And I think, as you said, you know, look, they've got to the tournament, that was the plan all along, to qualify. So now they've qualified, obviously they'll have a few friendlies now between now and the tournament, which will give Moreno a chance to have a look at more players, see if they're up to it. I think someone like De Gea might have seen better days now. I think Kepa's got to be considered the number one. But changing of the guard's always going to come, isn't it? All these experienced players are all getting on now. They're the wrong side of 30 in most cases.
De Gea's only 28, though, mate. I mean, goalkeepers go till they're like 37, and he's still a top-quality keeper, surely.
He is, but just not at the moment. His form has been dire for Man United, and yeah. I think you have to play, in my opinion, you have to play the players in form, goalkeepers or otherwise, and he just hasn't deserved a place, in my opinion.
Fair enough. Well, we'll leave it at that, with David De Gea picking up an injury in the international break anyway, but perhaps in Jason's case, wanting him gone and done and dusted in the Spanish national team. I know that's embellishing slightly, mate, don't worry. Jace, where can people find you on Twitter, man?
Just at Jason Pettigrew. That's PETTIGROVE.
And definitely not at Jason Pettiford, who is probably a completely different person whose name I get mixed up with yours on a regular occasion, if I have to say. You can find myself @O_J_Wilson on Twitter. You can get onto BetVictor as well for all of your gambling needs when it comes to the return of the La Liga fixtures, which are coming up just in the next few days or so, kicking off on Friday with the hotly touted Granada against Osasuna. I say that with a little bit of tongue-in-cheek, of course. But then we move into the weekend with Eibar taking on Barcelona in the early kickoff on Saturday. Atleti take on Valencia, an enticing tie on Saturday at about 3 o'clock UK time. Getafe against Leganes and Mallorca against Real Madrid wrap up Saturday. Then Deportivo Alavés take on Celta de Vigo, Real Sociedad against Betis, Espanyol against Villarreal, Athletic Club against Real Valladolid, and Sevilla against Levante, wrapping up the Sunday. We will be back in a week's time or so. Remember to get onto betvictor.com for all of your gambling needs on La Liga, football, sport in general. You must be 18 or over. Please gamble responsibly. For more information on gambling responsibly, please visit begambleaware.org. Until the next time on Ireland La Liga. Have a very good day.